welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and last time we promised you that this time we'd for sure go through how to bully-proof your child. This is a topic that we have seen in the news, and we have heard of children actually committing suicide who just no longer could face the ridicule of their friends. Very sad. So we're going to lay the platform here for our discussion with an agreed-upon definition of bullying, and that is, it's a specific type of aggression in which the behavior is intended to harm or hurt. The behavior occurs repeatedly over time, and there is an imbalance of power with a more powerful person or group attacking a less powerful one. That being said, we want to get right into some strategies that we can do for bully-proofing our children. And we're going to start with them as toddlers. So what is the first thing parents should do as they think of bully-proofing their children?
This is something they should do anyway. Stay engaged with your child. Parents need to be engaged with their children. You can't know whether your child is bullied or not if you are not engaged with them.
Yes, in fact, that's one of the risk factors, is that children and teens who come from homes where parents provide little emotional support for their children or have little involvement in their lives are at greater risk for engaging in bullying behavior or being bullied.
So you must be engaged, and that's not just the mama's responsibility. The daddy needs to be there. If the daddy didn't want to be a daddy, he shouldn't have been a daddy. But if he's going to have a child, then that daddy needs to take the responsibility of being the father of that child. Because boys don't learn how to respect themselves or how to respect others unless they have role models who can teach them those kinds of things. Now, sorry for all of the single mothers out there, but the truth of the matter is your sons need to have male role models. They're going to find them somewhere. And unfortunately, I think you can see it in society, that an awful lot of the young men today do not have role models that teach them honor and respect. Mm-hmm. Instead, they teach them opportunism, mm-hmm. which is not a good thing. The same thing holds true for young ladies. Young ladies still need to have a father figure around so that they can recognize how to be treated correctly. So it's very important for your children that the male role model and the female role model be there. The mother and the father be there and be engaged. That's just at the first level. The second level that goes with that is, if you are not engaged, how do you expect your children to come to you when they need help?
Yes.
They're not going to come because you haven't built the trust.
And it's amazing. You would not think, as you start with that toddler who cries, and you're coming off from many sleepless nights. But who would have thought that just making it a practice to eat together, making it a practice to have family worship together, to go on those walks and to enjoy all the marvelous things of nature for the first time again, all through their eyes, when you see the praying mantis or you see the cow for the first time again through your toddler's eyes, who would imagine that at that point you are fortifying them against being bullied? But you are. We know now that this baby wise movement, where they would actually start at a very young age and try to show the baby who's, in control here and make the schedules just meet the family schedules, they recognize that actually has the opposite effect. And parents who might have very rambunctious, aggressive little boys, and they might go, oh, we need to teach them to, you know, not do this and that. They're going to grow up to be bullies or be in the juvenile hall or whatever. It's amazing that it's no predictor at all. The predictor is if you stay engaged with that child.
Yes, and it cuts both ways. A parent who is engaged with their child is likely not to have a child who is bullied and likely not to have a child who bullies because the child is engaged with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first level. I think the next level is then teaching them as they grow older through your actions.
Yes.
Through your actions. This is important. We mentioned in the last show that we did that parents sometimes bully children. And you have to watch out as a parent. I wonder why a parent would bully a child, but it does happen.
Yes, and the parent that is bullying the child, I want to describe what it looks like, because there may be a father in a home that will recognize that his spouse is bullying their child, or vice versa. And this is a serious situation because we love our children, and we don't realize that things that happened to us as a child, now we're passing that pain on, and we don't even want to pass that pain on. But this is what it looks like. It's where there's maybe a constant teasing, and the teasing just infuriates the young child. For example, maybe the father is tired of the child having a messy diaper or whatever and starts calling him a bad name about that. And then that name just kind of becomes the child's nickname. And then as the child grows older, the father might not always use that nickname, but he will to get at that child, to get a reaction. And the more reaction he gets, the more the father will tease. And that kind of teasing really is harmful, and it really is a type of bullying.
Yes. I think that as we go on into this thing, the next thing that parents can do is to establish rules of how the house is to be run. Those rules should be few, fair, and enforced. If you don't do that kind of thing with a child, then it makes it much more difficult for you to reach a level of communication with that child that's going to prevent that child from seeking help elsewhere when they need your help.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you create a consistency in that child's life that is very, very comfortable for that child. It makes it nice. You know, the whole thing about children being punished for making toy guns is ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. Since sin entered the world, little boys have been making weapons out of something.
Yes.
And most of those little boys did not turn into psychopaths, did not turn into murderers, did not turn into anything bad. They played cowboys and Indians, they played war, whatever. They're going to do that. If that's the focus, you are really shallow.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better to have few rules that deal with principles, make them fair and fairly enforced, mm-hmm. and the child will be much more comfortable with their life. They'll know what to expect. They'll know how to operate within the protocol that the family has that's called normal. And when they're able to do that, it removes huge chunks of communication barriers so that you can have a much more enjoyable time mm-hmm. with your children. After all, shouldn't you have fun with your children?
You should have fun. You should have joy. You should take every opportunity to celebrate, because life is tough. And if they can see that you take whatever's handed to you, you might not be well-to-do, you might wonder where the next payment's going to come from. I have no problem, you know, sharing that with the family, but it needs to be shared not with anxiety, but with the hope and with the knowledge that our Heavenly Father clothes the lilies of the valley. He certainly cares more for you. So we have kind of, that those first years, we've kind of covered that leading up into the school years. And here we are. How can a parent, as their child is beginning that kindergarten or first grade, how can they start fortifying them so that they are bully-proof that first day of school?
I don't know that they can ever get them bully-proofed that first day of school, but I would like to back up and mention one thing that needs to be ongoing and needs to permeate this thing. Please have worship with your children. Teach them to worship their Heavenly Father. That will become more important as the years go by. That will be one big part of bully-proofing a child on both sides of it. Teach them to know God is love. Through your actions, you teach them that way. Now, on the first day of school, you're not going to bully-proof your child. Your child's not going to be bullied on the first day of school. Your child might get run into by someone, but that's not bullying. It may turn into bullying by about the 14th day if it's not taken care of. But children at young ages, particularly if they're really young when they go to daycare, or they're not even playing with each other.
Yes, it's parallel play. They don't play with each other so much, but they definitely will try to get things away from each other. They'll push each other. They may bite each other. I think I think those kinds of things, definitely the adults in the lives are still molding and taking care of things. But as you get into kindergarten and first grade, we become more autonomous. We do play and interact in a more intimate way. And I think that as I want to bully-proof my child, I'll want to give them some tools for diffusing. So if someone says something mean to you, how do you react? Do you break down and just cry and it's the end of the day? Or can you take what they've said and turn it around and make it sound funny, maybe just by parroting it? You know, give them some concrete tools that they can actually take those little incidences that we don't really consider bullying, but it can help that child immensely if they can think of something to do. It empowers them. They can walk away. They can take something and make it humorous. They can take the situation and try to make a joke out of it. They can, just quickly going and telling on that person doesn't really empower that child. Thinking back in your own experience, what were some of the tools that you used?
Well, oftentimes it was mostly humor or just walking away from the situation. I never was in a position where I had a bunch of people who wanted to bully me. And I think part of the reason they didn't want to bully me is that I was very fast, and either I could run faster than them or they didn't want to pick on me because I didn't open up an opportunity to be picked on.
Yeah, so if we could can that, you know, and be able to package it somehow so that parents could just, you know, feed it to their children and say, now you really aren't very susceptible to being bullied to begin with. Well, we have to take a break right here, but I do want to unpackage that a little bit more. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media. You know, be sure and like Education Currents on Facebook and also consider partnering with us in this educational ministry. You can share your resources or show ideas. My address is P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Or call me at 301-824-3162. Welcome back. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and we are trying to figure out ways to bully-proof our children. So we had been discussing before the break that, you know, you really, really weren't bullied that much. I mean,
no,
you just
there
didn't
were
open yourself. You didn't seem to be a lightning rod for it.
No, and I think part of that has to do with how self-aware you are, and also that you show an ability to cope with it. I think one of the interesting things that parents could consider, especially if they have a child who they think is susceptible to being bullied, would be to find a good dojo and put them into some self-defense courses. A really good one doesn't teach them how to fight. It teaches them how to have self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches them a lot about discipline. I know that in one school that I've been in, there's a young man in there who's not very old, who is already a brown belt. And his demeanor and everything about him is gentle and kind, but he's never susceptible to being bullied because he carries about a self-worth,
mm-hmm.
carries himself in such a way mm-hmm. that other kids just don't even think about bullying him. He's very popular, gets along well. He's not any bigger than any of the rest of them, but he has that self-assurance that mm-hmm. comes out that he's not going to be bullied in his life.
I'm thinking, I'm going through all of the students that I have, and it's interesting because private schools often attract students who have been bullied. So we have occasion to hear some pretty horrific stories of experiences that these children have had where they've come home, you know, really bruised with big welts on them from being physically beat up after school every day, or girls that were totally ostracized and had no friends, even though this school had probably 600 girls in it, never could find that friend. And the one common thread through it all is the child's own sense of self-worth.
Yes, it's very much a big part of it. And everything that parents should do as they go through this is to develop that child's sense of self-worth. You know, you walk into a school, particularly high schools, for example, and there is, without question, the pretty people and the common people and the misfits, basically the three categories that you get. You see the pretty people, they're the ones who are privileged. Ironically, as much as it might want to be denied, the pretty people are privileged by the teachers, too. They are the athletes. They are the homecoming queens and kings or whatever they have out there. They are sometimes, but rarely, the top scholastic people. But those are the people who will get the little, oh, I'm late, well, we'll forgive you this time type of response from faculty and administration alike. When you come down to the misfit, oftentimes those people, they get no tolerance. It's a zero tolerance policy for them because mm-hmm. they don't fit. And that was borne out in research by Anniton some time ago. She researched high schools that were, some of them were high in the upper class, some of them were middle class, and some of them were lower class. And the way the teachers responded to the students in each of those different class schools was significantly different, even though the curriculum was the same. So it's very easy that the pretty people get these privileges that nobody else gets. But then when you come down to the misfits, they don't get the same privileges. So it behooves instructors to be watching out that that doesn't happen. It's something that you really yes. have to be aware of and keep from letting yes. it happen.
And I think that parents and teachers can do a lot to be proactive against this violence and bullying. They can come together and form a task force, because what you want to do is create a culture of mutual respect. And when you go at it from a positive aspect like that, rather than the no tolerance, but that you're creating a culture of respect, then with it comes you will have less violence, you'll have less bullying. And you can, I like the idea of having an anti-bullying website where people can go on there anonymously and say, you know, this is happening at school. Students can go on there so you're not telling on people. And it just alerts the staff and the faculty that, hey, these situations are, you know, a potential bullying situation. And parents can push for that. They don't have to feel helpless against the establishment, because I don't know of any school that wants to have a bullying problem. We don't want to have that problem.
Yes, and when we start talking about public school especially, this is where it gets really, really difficult. Because in most of your public schools, you're talking about schools that have 500 to 2,000 kids in them. That's an awful lot of students in a single,
mm-hmm.
you know, cluster. there is a lot of room for bullying and very bad types of bullying to happen between the time class lets out and the time the kid's picked up,
mm-hmm.
or from the time the kid goes to school till the time school gets out. There's room for bullying all over the place in those kinds of institutions. And so a student who reports being bullied is likely to receive retribution far and above the solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that schools work on bullying intervention, not in the form of zero tolerance, but in the form of educating how to intervene,
mm-hmm.
how to help students learn how to cope with the bullying or to dissipate the bullying, or mm-hmm. both of those. And it really is a process that needs to happen in the form of dialogue.
Yes. I want to share. I know we're almost at the end of our show, but I share this with my students, and it's so effective. We look at behavior that we want to extinguish in each other, the class. This is a class activity. And we do a little experiment where a student comes in and he disrespects the teacher. That seems like a pretty safe thing to do. So he disrespects the teacher, and he doesn't know this, but the students have all been prepped that when he, you know, makes fun of the instructions that the teacher gave, or, you know, tries to make a clown of himself, all of the students are just to get busy doing something else. They're not to laugh or comment. And then we debrief the student who was making this disrespectful act. We debrief him, and we ask him, how did it feel when no one laughed? Everyone just looked away and did their own schoolwork, and they just ignored you. And he goes, it was uncomfortable. It really took away the effect that I thought I was going to get. So after we do that simulation, we use it then throughout the year. If a child starts clowning around, I'll just simply say, don't give him power. That's my cue word to the class. Don't give him power. And they all then respond by looking away, ignoring, going about, you know, something else. And I think there's other strategies. We just don't have time to talk about them now. But there's other things that we can help middle-aged students and high school students, because that's where we're finding, you know, the ultimate destructive power of bullying.
You know, just to finish this up, if you think about it, if the anti-bullying learning started in kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
and it was a consistent, same process from kindergarten all the way through middle school, by the time you got into high school, there wouldn't be a bullying problem.
Yes.
If you were to teach that same principle,
mm-hmm.
use the same words, the same code
yes.
words, so that by the time those children reached high school, those code words could be said.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them power. And it would happen.
It would. It would happen. There's a lot of good to be had, and our children are just waiting for us to help them. That's all there is to it. Well, we've come to the end of our show, and thank you so much for being with us. I have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.